Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. In 2009, Shepard Fairey came to Boston.
The next year, Banksy paid us a visit.
And now, Swoon is in town.
Some call it street art. Others say graffiti. But Swoon just calls it working outside.
Her real name, if you can believe it, is Caledonia Dance Curry. She's 34. She's based in Brooklyn, trained at the Pratt Institute. Her signature work consists of elaborate paper prints and cutouts of life-size human figures. She labors over them for hours in her studio, and then, with gorilla-like efficiency, she takes them to the street and seals them to walls with wheat paste.
It's not as permanent as spray paint, but they still do hang around for a while. And a lot of people are happy that they do. Her work is highly acclaimed, which is why the Institute of Contemporary Art has brought Swoon to Boston.
She's just completed a huge two-part installation at the ICA that opens to the public on Saturday. Swoon and ICA adjunct curator Pedro Alonso gave us a preview, and we talked about the inevitable tension involved in bringing street art to a museum. So what are we looking at?
This is a kind of a mural that I made. It's composed of a few different images. The main image is a linoleum block print of a woman named Miss Bennett, who's an Aboriginal painter that I met when I was in Australia. I spent the day with her. She painted, and I sketched her.
Wow.
And she told me stories. And this is actually the largest linoleum block print I've ever made. It's about 11 by 15
It's huge.
Feet, yeah. It was a big, it was a lot of carving. So the piece itself is, it's called The Anthropocene Extinction. The theme is that we're in the middle of this mass extinction event on planet Earth.
Not extinction of man, but brought about by man.
Brought about by man, yeah, by the impact of humans on our ecosystem. So I just decided to put that thought in my mind and see how it comes out.
So as you mentioned, the primary figure is this sort of Buddha-like character.
Who yeah, is she this, kind of is, right?
This painter, this Aboriginal painter that
yeah.
you met.
I think if anything, she represents the, you know, she's the last Aboriginal, well, she's one of the last Aborigines in Australia to have actually lived as a nomad. This is one of the cultures that lived in harmony with nature. I mean, tremendous knowledge to live in one of the most difficult ecosystems on Earth for humans with, you know, varying climate, very little rainfall. I mean, these people really struggled to survive and developed a culture in order to be able to exist there. And so if you look at her, the animals around her are blue and white. It's kind of like that harmony. And then below you have these demons that are consuming, devouring.
So you affix your cutouts with wheat paste for the most part?
Yeah.
Is that what you've done here?
Yeah. You know, obviously this is more of a mural than most of the work that I do outside, which is done relatively quickly and at ground level. And this was something where I had like 2 weeks in a scissor lift. So it's a different kind of an environment to
right.
work in.
Well, when you're doing them outside, you're doing them, for the most part, illicitly. So you
yeah.
have to do it in a very, very quick motion.
Yeah, it tends to be. I mean, I think that my ethic about that has evolved over years. Sometimes I'm slower now, just to sort of, it depends on where you are and what the neighborhood is like.
Sure.
Sometimes I like the neighborhood conversations, or other times I'm like, it's just fun to just kind of go and like make them pop up and then disappear.
Let's move on. I have to ask, with a real name like Caledonia Curry...
Caledonia Dance Curry.
Why do you need to call yourself something like Swoon? I think you already have a pretty great nom
yeah,
de plume.
Yeah. No, I don't mind my name, actually. It just, at a certain point, I started using a nom de plume just for various reasons, and then it stuck.
So we're coming under the elevator here. And what is this?
This is the underside of a temple structure, and these are various forms which are emerging and running in a river, which at the moment looks a bit like party decorations to me. I feel like I need to fix it a little, if I can. But
very sophisticated party decorations.
Sure, yeah. This piece is actually designed to be seen mostly as you ride the elevator, because you can sort of travel up the piece.
All right, let's go up.
So this is a bamboo temple that was designed actually for this space. Like when they invited me to the ICA and I looked around the building, and this was the part of the building that I just found kind of strange and interesting, that there's this basically an elevator shaft, but it's glass on both sides, and you ride the elevator up. And I liked the idea of creating something that as you rode the elevator up, you could get different views of it. So this is kind of the central, the sort of nexus or the beginning part of the piece is this temple that is kind of hemorrhaging species and or something in the...
Yeah, there's something up there that it looks like a germinating seed pod where the animals begin to spill out of, and they kind of filter down through this temple and then out to the wall.
Did you construct this in your studio space and then pull it apart to
bring
it here?
Yeah, it's designed in layers, so there's five layers.
It's modular.
From the dome, yeah, it's modular.
Yeah, there's steel rods running through the length of it. It's designed on the principle of a skyscraper, so the weight is distributed along the steel rods.
Well, this brings up an interesting thing about how this fits in the broader scheme of your work. Mm-hmm. It's often said that your work it ages like a pair of jeans.
Right.
Like you put up these paper things, and they yellow, and they flake, mm-hmm. and they fall apart outside, mm-hmm. and they just look cooler and cooler and cooler mm-hmm. until they're gone. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is a meticulously and carefully constructed item in a museum mm-hmm. that is not going
Never
to decay.
Never going to have that life cycle. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
There's a trade-off in every situation. And when you're working outside, the kinds of logistics that you're dealing with are such a constant struggle that you don't get to end up spending that sort of pure time in the creation process. But you get all these like phenomenal, beautiful, amazing interactions. You get this decay. You just get like all this amazing interaction with the world. And when you're working inside, you kind of get to really just go into that crazy zone where it's only about this like creating something which is perfectly sort of pouring out from your imagination. But then there it is. It's fixed. And the only kinds of interactions that you ever have are people who have come to a museum who expect to see it, and it's kind of like preserved in this place that, you know, it doesn't have a life cycle. I like to work in both situations. I don't think I could survive solely working inside, but I really do like it every once in a while.
I have to ask, considering that you have street artist on your resume, mm-hmm. that uh-huh. you know, 2 years ago, Shepard Ferry was exhibiting here, mm-hmm. and he got arrested for tagging out mm-hmm. in the community.
Yeah.
Does that loom in your mind?
Not especially large, because I have the sense that a more kind of open visual public domain is a really good thing. And so I try to always work in a way that's like kind of positively impactful. And, you know, perhaps it's a bit naive, but so far.
Yeah, somehow I don't think the BPD would see it that way.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that, you know, like, I think it's one of those things where, you know, when I started working outside, you know, over 10 years ago, I just decided that I understood that risk and that I was just going to go forward. And so...
Are you planning to do any work outside while you're in town?
Sure. Of course. Yeah, definitely.
So we'll just have to be surprised.
Yes.
That street artist Swoon and her curator at the ICA, Pedro Alonso.
So if an elaborate life-size paper cutout portrait suddenly appears on a wall in your neighborhood, you now probably know who to thank.
Anthropocene Extinction is the name of the installation. It opens to the public at the ICA tomorrow and runs through December 30th. Details and some gorgeous photos are at radioboston.org.
One more thing today. As we heard earlier in the show, and all week, it's been a very difficult several days for Vermonters and communities in Western Massachusetts. Flooding, power outages, isolation, and the sense that it's been a season of one natural disaster after the other, all of that makes Tropical Storm Irene feel as if it packed a punch worthy of the $7 billion impact estimated by the federal government. Now, on my street, we were very lucky. All we lost were two trees. But they were big, about 60 feet tall each. They were leafy and comforting. They were as much a part of our neighborhood as anything, and in our evening walks together, my daughter had taken to reaching her little hand out to gently pat those trees' ropey brown bark. So now you can sense their absence. The spots where the trees once stood now feel arid, brittle, a hard blankness against the street. Over in Boston Common, Irene's winds downed a couple of century-old elms. It damaged the old silver maple, the tallest tree growing in Arnold Arboretum. By midweek, in the city of Boston alone, there were reports of 500 downed trees. And there were certainly thousands more across the state. Yes, they can and will grow back. Mayor Tom Menino has said he'll try to figure out a way to replace every tree the city has lost. And in a place like Massachusetts, with such a long history of human habitation and human manipulation of nature, the arboreal body count left behind by Tropical Storm Irene should be just another wallop that New England can and will recover from. But it doesn't really feel like that. And maybe that's because to us, trees feel like they live on a different timescale. I'm thinking of the slice of a giant sequoia in the Museum of Science. That tree was 2,000 years old when it was cut down. The museum is marked where important moments in human history fall on the tree's rings. We come and go, but a tree like that remains. So to see such a patient organism so suddenly toppled by the quick chaos of a fast-moving storm, to witness that feels somehow wrong. Our minor human timescales crashing in on the eternal. So as communities clean up and rebuild from Irene, with so many trees gone, I do wonder how long it will take for things to really feel the same. On our street, we only lost 2 trees, but it feels like we lost 2 of our neighbors.
That's it for the show. Monday on Radio Boston, the Rube Goldberg-like systems that once powered the Boston Public Library.
The runners would get the book, and then they would put it on the book railroad.
I didn't even mention the pneumatic tubes. That's Monday on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. Join us again on Labor Day for more Radio Boston.